The stands may be silent, but supporting where you're from has never been so important. Super Value, supporting the GAA All-Ireland Football Championship for over 11 years. Bringing you the best of GAA conversations.
Welcome along to the Bernard Brogan podcast. This is episode 4, with special thanks to Super Value, proud sponsors of the 2020 GAA Championship. My guest today is a good friend and colleague of mine, Jack McCaffrey. Jack, are you there?
I am indeed, yeah. Thanks for having me on, Bruno.
No, thanks a million, Jack. And I know you're just off a long few days and a 12-hour shift, am I right?
15, yeah. The night shifts are a bit longer, but yeah, I'm off for the next little while, so happy out.
Brilliant. No. Thanks a million for giving up your time and looking forward to the chat. What I'd like to chat to you today about, Jack, is some serious but and a bit of crack as well. I'd like to chat a little bit about little Jack. And what shaped you as a young kid? Because I actually don't know that much. Sometimes we don't have these deep conversations. So I'd like to know a little bit about that. I want to chat a little bit GAA, obviously. I want to chat a little bit about the front line and the work you're doing and a bit and how that's going for you and your career. And I also want to talk about a fantasy you have that only I know about or very few people know about. That is, I'm sure the listeners would be very interested in. So first of all, though, how's things going? How is Jack?
Good, yeah, good. Kind of been busy the last little while, and had an exam a while back. Had some time off from work for that. I've been busy since I got back, and now a little break again. So, yeah, things are good. Kind of, I'm based in Portobello at the moment, so a bit of a new experience for me, being around town, around a couple of my friends who I wouldn't have been as close with, and just trying to figure out nice new ways to get in and out of my own head during lockdown. So doing a lot of road running, a bit of swimming in the sea, and not too much. It's exciting, unfortunately.
Oh, that sounds good. So the rumour, unfortunately, the rumour wasn't true of last week. We didn't see it on at the weekend with the Dubs. Where did that rumour start from, or do you have any idea?
I don't know. I kind of took a step back from social media and all that jazz a couple of years ago, and you, I think, might have been the first person to text me, and then I got a few. Dermo was on to me, a couple of people whose names I won't mention who were had vested interests were on to me, and I'm sure, look, there's a bit of a lockdown on at the moment, people have a lot of spare time, and I'd say someone just thought it'd be funny. There's not too many people who have a big curly head like me, so I find it hard to believe that they genuinely thought I was up there. But yeah, there was no truth to that. So
unfortunately, you are though keeping yourself very fit. You sent me a screenshot of one of your runs, and I was trying to figure out where you were. So obviously that makes sense. Portobello, where you're living, it showed where you came out. You sent me that screen grab. You ran a 10K in 38 minutes. Like I ran a few 5Ks over the lockdown trying to stay fit, and I did one 10K with Dec Lally, and I gasped to get under 50 minutes. Like, that's nearly, this Rio is a potential during the summer, or?
I don't think long distances will be my forte, Bruno. Not surprised you're gassed doing a 10K. That's worth the running for you, in fairness. No, it's not. Yeah, like, I don't know. It's something I've tried to get into. Obviously, stepping away from football, when you go, as I'm sure you found yourself, you go from having a really structured routine and staying in good physical shape is a top priority. I think it's really important to settle into a bit of an exercise thing. And like, I try and get a sweat on every day. Again, you've probably seen more than others that like my diet has a tendency to be a bit deplorable. So there was probably potential if I stepped away from exercising regularly that I would balloon. So I'm glad that I've found something I'm enjoying for the minute, and it's definitely keeping me trim enough before Clontarf training comes back, which is probably sooner rather than later at this.
I know Plunkett's are very close to it as well. Well, 38 minutes is not just trotting along, Jack. That's pretty, I haven't seen many of those times, but I always thought you were a short, sharp man. But anyway, we'll get back to some of that talk. But talk to me a little bit about your upbringing and I suppose the influences in your life. I know sport is a big part of it, but there's a lot more to Jack than just sport, as we know.
Right, well, I suppose first of all, I've been very fortunate in lots of ways throughout my life, but I grew up with, I'm the eldest of four. mom and dad were at home, and grew up in Clontarf, just a stone's throw from the beach, stone's throw from our local GA pitches, pitch 34 and 35 in St. Dan's. Went to a fantastic primary school called Skulnason, which is up in Harmanstown, which would have a lot of kind of GA links, and really have fostered that side of things as you went through school. And then went into Belvedere, which was a fantastic secondary school for me as well. They wouldn't play Gaelic football in there. So that kind of, those two strands of my life would have separated a little bit coming up to junior cert and that. But, you know, I played rugby, did a bit of athletics, and, you know, the way you do when you're a kid, you just get thrown into everything. My parents were very good for doing that. I'd say they spent Saturdays, Sundays, if not every day of the week, just ferrying the four of us from place to place so that we could do anything really we wanted to, and figure out what we enjoyed. In terms of influence, I suppose, like, if you're looking at it from a sports point of view, there were very few days that would go by that myself and my siblings wouldn't just go up to the park with dad, and he'd bring four footballs. He'd be behind the goal, just kicking them back, and we'd be running over and back, trying left foot kicks, right foot kicks, whatever it was. And so, you know, GA was always a nice distraction for me. It was always something I found fun, and fortunately it was something I became good at. Outside of that, I suppose, how academic can you be in primary school? But I would have been a bright enough kid, I think. And my parents would have been very keen to work on that side of things as well. So there were kind of summer camps. There was always encouraging us to read books in particular. Mm. We grew up without a TV at home. So that kind of was I remember queuing up for Harry Potter books for the midnight release, and you'd go home and just wouldn't see your friends for a few days as you tore through it. And I kind of got a real deep love for reading and writing then. Mm.
What perspective did that, not having TV, obviously at the moment, parents, myself included, with the phones and kids and looking for a bit of peace, I suppose lockdown has caused that, but computer games, all the current challenges, what perspective did you have as a kid, or what way did that help you, not having TV every day to be ran in the door from school to watch cartoons or whatever? Was it noticeable, or do you attribute that to it?
I got ripped to shreds by my mate for 15 years, but it... was it noticeable? Probably not. Like, look, the big lasting effect of it is that we're all great readers, and that's something I'm really grateful for, that I can pick up a book and disappear into it for a day or two. That's something I mightn't have ended up developing, or I mightn't have ended up doing if we did have a telly. I was probably just ahead of the kind of age where everyone has smartphones from a very young age, and I'm still... Well, I'm 27. I'm quite bad for disappearing into my phone in the middle of conversations sometimes, and you know that kind of thing where you're just taking it out and checking it the whole time. And I think I would have been goosed if I was 3 or 4 years younger and had been handed an iPhone when I was 10 or 11. To be honest, Bernard, I think it's a bit hard to say, like, not having a telly made any particular concrete differences, but I think it's a dangerous enough time sometimes in work. You see, you know, I'd see 10-year-old kids pulling their phones that are nicer than mine, and you're kind of wondering, like, look, they're very handy and they can be fantastic, like, educational resources. You're probably training kids these days for a workplace that we can't even envisage yet, where being kind of proficient with technology and all that is going to be a vital skill. But at the same time, I do wonder some of the things you can be exposed to as an adult online, on Twitter or whatever, can be damaging enough and difficult to deal with. And I wouldn't fancy doing it and going through puberty at the same time. And you can kind of see how that might have a negative effect on some of the kids that are growing up these days.
Yeah, fair play. So when you're in your childhood, what did you want to be when you grew up? Like, obviously not having TV to frame your judgment. Did you have different kind of aspirations as a regular kind of kid to watch TV, but not that you were irregular, but just what did you want? Like, what, when you thought about the future, what did it look like? And is it anything that has panned out, or just interested?
Yeah, I suppose, like, the only thing I always wanted to do was play for Dublin. And, like, where I live in Clontarf is very close to St Anne's Power, where I grew up, sorry. And whenever Dublin were playing on a Sunday, up till I was about 13 or 14, myself, all my cousins, my uncles, my parents would pop down onto the coast and walk our way into Croker, kicking a ball along the whole way, Dublin jerseys on, going in, cheering on the lads, and then going straight back to Clontarf GA Club where they'd have a barbecue after games, and you'd run around and you'd be trying to replicate kind of the moves that some people had done. And the only reason I stopped doing that is because I got a job in Croker selling programs before the games, and I used to, you'd see the team bus come in and like, geez, there's the Dublin players. And you know, that was something that I definitely always wanted to do. And in terms of anything else, I didn't really have probably still don't have a concrete idea of exactly who or what I want to be. But it was only really coming up to the Leaving Cert that I decided to throw my hat at medicine. I was probably reluctant to do it. My two parents are doctors, and that probably delayed me making that decision a bit because I didn't want to be seen to just follow them along. But they never would have put me under pressure or encouraged me to do it, but I just got to see them home and enjoying the work that they were doing. And they both are in very different fields. Their mum works in the addiction services and dad kind of is in sports medicine. So they're not your typical doctor jobs, but just seeing them both enjoying their job, working with people the whole time, I decided that it might be something I'd like to do. Mm. I've always enjoyed kind of coaching kids, no more than you've done yourself with summer camps since we were both very young. I've always kind of gotten on well with children and enjoy having a bit of a buzz with them. So pediatrics kind of fit like a glove once I tried it. And yeah, really happy with how that's gone.
Yeah, fair play. And I'd like to dig into that a little bit more. But you say they're selling programs in Croke Park, and your dad obviously playing for Dubs and All Ireland's. Like, how did you go about in your own head? Did you go after things a bit more to try and play for Dublin? Did you invest more time? Did you work harder? Or did you kind of just, did it just happen organically through just the love for the game?
So I suppose the first thing is that dad would have been finished up with Dublin before I was born, really. And I only really became conscious of the fact that he had played for Dublin when I started getting involved with development squads and under 13s, under 14s. And as I kind of got a bit older within the club, I realised that he was a very well-respected member of the club and had a good playing career behind him. It's not something he ever would have wanted or talked to me about until I started playing for Dublin, when he shared some of the things that he'd experienced. And our careers took very different trajectories. So it was really interesting to hear that side of things. I've been very lucky, Bruno. And I think I know how your career panned out and how it started off. I got involved with one of the first really good development squad setups. I'm fast, which isn't something I ever particularly worked at. And I kind of rode this wave through to under 21, where my first year at under 21 was under Jim Gavin, who the following year was the Dublin senior manager. Like, you really couldn't have written a nicer path for myself, say Kieran, Mannion, like that kind of group of guys who were born in 1993. I was very lucky, and I probably, without being too cocky about it, I probably didn't have to work very, very hard until I was in the Dublin senior setup. I went in, and then in 2012, I was knocking around under Pat, very peripheral, just for a month or two during the summer. In 2013, I was again a kid, just running around having fun, and it all went really well. And then 2014, I was an absolute shambles of a bloke, and it had gone poorly. And that was probably the first time I was put to the pin of my collar, from the GA point of view, that you know, you can't just coast through all this. You have to put the head down and do a bit of work. And thankfully, I did find a bit of a drive in, a bit of a desire to not be this kind of one-year wonder, for lack of a better word, but one-year player and then disappear off. I wanted to do a bit more. I felt I was good enough to do a bit more. And that drove me on for kind of 2015. Then the next big obstacle I had was probably my cruciate injury in 2017. And that is something that I'm kind of glad happened to me, if that makes sense, because I sometimes question myself whether I'm mentally weak, whether when I have to dig deep and work hard, whether I can do it, because I've been lucky enough not to have to do it too often. But I think, and again, you can draw on your own experience here, I think anyone who comes back from a cruciate injury to the level they were at beforehand has kind of proved that beyond any reasonable doubt. And to prove that to myself and then to other people is something I'm really proud of having done. So, in summary, very lucky for a while, hard for a while.
Talk to me about 2014, because I know 2012 was it, and you went through and had a 2013 went great for you. Was it the over celebration? Was it taking things for granted? I had a bit of it myself in 2012 after obviously getting over the line for the first time. And I know I was there with you, so I can I'm prompting you to answer these honestly in 2014. But what was it that just what first of all, what was it that you struggled with, and then what changed, I suppose?
Well, I would be interested to hear a bit more about 2012 because I remember coming into the Dublin setup having just won the first All Ireland in 16 years, like shaking with nerves, walking into the dressing room a week or two, being like just head down, head down. And then kind of quite quickly looking around and being like, did these lads win All Ireland, like they're carrying on the way that they're carrying on. And anyway, then 2013 came along. We were this kind of like swashbuckling team. We just ran around. It was everyone forward, man to man. 2014, I was in first year in college. I was drinking properly for the first time. Not that I would say I had a problem with that or anything, but I was going out a lot physically. I was probably 3 or 4 kilos heavier than I am now, and that's with significantly less muscle on me. And yeah, I probably had a little arrogance thing in my back pocket that this has worked from, like, all I have to do is turn up. All I've done really is turn up since I was 13, and that's going to keep on happening. And I was dropped for a couple of games, got back in for that Donegal game. Actually, still think I shouldn't have been subbed off at halftime despite all this. I think we would have, anyway. That game.
You would have caught him, would you? You would have caught Ryan on the way.
My man had scored 1-1 in a half of football, like, and I'm arguing that I should have been left on the pitch. So but I think that was probably it. It was like looking back on it, it was probably natural. Like, why would I think that anything had to change? All I'd had was success given doing things the way I'd done them up to that point. But it caught me. I learned a very valuable lesson. I like to think I'm a good bit more humble now than I was back then.
Yeah. Talk to me about 2012. That's just interesting, your perspective on it. Obviously, the reason why I say I know it from 2012 is that I went with the Sam Maguire to every school, to every pub for 3 months. Then I went to Australia with AMO, and I didn't get back till the end of January. So, and probably went a bit excessive myself in 2012. Now, as you said, we did get back into it, we did put the head down. But what do you mean when you came in that? Did you feel like we were getting after the things right, or did you feel that we were loose, or what did you mean by that?
Yeah, it just, I remember some of the meetings Pat had. There were some were very funny. I was very much nearly like a fly on the wall. Sorry, funnily enough, 2012 is probably the best football I've played in my entire life. I was on fire throughout an under-21 All-Ireland Championship, and I genuinely think if I had to come on against Mayo in that All-Ireland semi-final, I could have run amok. Like, nobody had a clue who I was. No one knew anything about me. Anyway. Yeah, I'm very hung up on the games I didn't get.
I see that. Yeah, jeez.
But what I found was, like, I suppose it was my first time being involved with an adult team as well. So maybe there was a bit of that. But it just seemed like every training session there was a story about a night out that happened the weekend before, or some stories that we'll leave in the dressing room. And I was only young, and but it just, I expected to walk into this thing that, like, I'd come from minor, under 21, senior. I was ready to up my game, to raise to a higher standard. And I just found that I didn't really have to, which surprised me a bit. And I don't know, I think having spoken to a few other lads who were around there and who were more similar to you, who'd been there for a while, that I think that it's pretty universally acknowledged that 2012 was a dip on the year before, which is only natural, obviously. But yeah, I was just surprised at how little a step up it was. And I think it probably should have been a tougher one.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, yeah, I always look back at that time and it was a kick of a ball. I think Mayo, like I had a chance to put us into the All-Ireland final. We could have got over the line.
What? It was low and hard.
I know. Anytime I tell anyone about goal score now, it's forget about the top score. I actually tried to put a low and hard, but it started to rise. It lives with me, as you say, the torture of things that don't go right. And yeah, it's tough. But talk to me about the 2012 and even 14. There's times when we overexcess and we don't tune into the things that are right. But for me, that's what makes it count. That's what makes it matter. The dressing room, the crack, the colleagues. And when I look back at my time with Dublin, yes, there's some magic memories of the pitch and lifting Sam Maguire, but 95% of my positive thoughts and memories are the stories, the crack, even training camps, even times it was tough. But that's what I go back to. How important for you was the people and the dressing room in your journey?
It was everything. I'm completely on board with you on that. And that's why when people are asking me around the place now, like, do you miss it when you're watching the matches? And, like, of course you do. You look out and you go, wouldn't it be great to be there? But, like, arriving, like, if playing for Dublin was arriving at training, going home, turning up for matches, playing them, going home, I would have packed it in years ago. Like, some people think, look at you like you have two heads when you talk about arriving, training an hour and a half before it starts. But you, some days you like skip into the dressing room and you have a good story to tell. Or I used to kind of be friendly with Cozzy or Mano a bit more outside of football. And I'd have a gag about them that I couldn't wait to tell everybody. And you go and just rip them out of it. And there's always like so many different characters, like just Eod with a sour head on him the whole time in the corner, or like, and you know if someone had done something slightly embarrassing on social media to just drop it into conversation with O'Gara, and he'd like, oh, I would eat him up, and eventually it would boil out. And anyway,
speaking of O'Gara there, Jack, while I have you, I told him that I was coming on with you today, and I think it was actually Eamon Fennell that christened you this Boo the Friendliest, World's Cutest Dog. But O'Gara sent me a picture that hopefully we can put on screen now. And see the resemblance, even though you're actually looking strikingly well at the moment, there is still a resemblance up on screen there, Jack. I know you might be able to see it, but yeah, so Gara was well equipped to give it to you between the eyes. He's a great character in the dressing room, wasn't he?
Yeah. No, I remember it was Nick McCauley who christened me that. We were going to a bloody training camp in Dingle, of all places, and we stopped somewhere in Offaly, I think, for a cuppa on the way down, and Amo walked into it. A tiny little corner.
It was a Dare shop. I think, was it? Was it stopping in the Dare in Limerick?
This teddy bear of the dog. Like, how was it there? Anyway, yeah, that brought me down a peg or two. I was probably too confident for a little girl. Yes, no, the fact that facial hair is now acceptable has done me a few favours. So I'm coming up with that.
While you have the mic, is there any slagging or any stories you'd like to share with us around an O'Gara or a Mick Fitz? I know there's maybe is there any good anecdotes that you were thinking about before the show?
Yeah, no, I was trying to think last night. I had a nice night in work, but not nice enough to sit down.
That's okay.
Anything that comes to mind, I'll volunteer. But nothing as of yet.
No, come here. No, they're all right. I think you mentioned something there about your confidence and question yourself and the injury and all that stuff. Like, I would have said that you were probably the most self-assured and self-confident person. Not cocky, self-confident. And self-aware is a word I'm using a lot at the moment. It's just you were just happy in yourself and you were really content and you backed your ability. Is that what it was like? Did you feel like that under a bonnet? You always talk about the smile in a minute, but what did you ever doubt yourself? You know what I mean? And I know there's times where you might have been playing as well, but it was probably because of your overindulgence more than your ability. Do you know what I mean? And it was all within your control. Did you always just feel you had the ability?
Did I always feel I had the ability? From a footballing point of view, yeah, I suppose I did. It's interesting that you mentioned that. Like, I'm kind of doing a good bit of work on that myself at the moment. On just, I haven't figured out quite yet how to get in and out of my own head properly and where I'm at and just kind of checking in with myself. One thing that I am very good at is kind of reading other people and giving them what they want and kind of showing them a side of me that I think that they want to see, especially in like media things, just a bit of a smile and whatever. It's not always what's going on, but it's something I've found has worked for me, is just kind of projecting that. Now, look, 90% of the time that is the case, but I've had times when I've been very down, and people just wouldn't know about it until they do. And that's only happened to me once or twice, fortunately, but it's kind of been pent up a long time before it's been teased out. From a football point of view, I've always been confident. Everything else, no, not always. I like to think I've been lucky through work and through various social circles to just meet a really wide variety of people. No more so than through Dublin football. Like you've such different personalities, and I can't explain how much I respect anyone who's comfortable in their own skin. Like, and I don't care if that's you, the All-American, handsome Gaelic footballer, whatever, or if it's some fella who wears flare jeans and has no interest in sport or whatever it is. Like, someone is cool, as far as I'm concerned, if they are happy and comfortable being them. So that's kind of what I aspire to now, to just be happy with where I'm at and what I'm doing. And I like to think I'm getting there, but it hasn't always been like that, no. The football, you've seen me shed a tear or two, I know.
You're a very transparent person, in my view, anyway. And how are you, like, and you talk about, like, I love that. It's like people who are happy, comfortable in their skin, no matter what they are, because the times I am uncomfortable in my skin, that I'm questioning myself as much as anyone else. And you, how are you getting after that? Like, genuinely, like, what is, I know exercise is important, but you're just talking about getting in and out of your own head, and COVID and lockdown, resilience and mental health. And I did a talk with Ted there, and Furman from Ballymun, who's trying to have a support group for people. Like, how are you managing to do that, or is it working for you?
Yeah, exercise is a massive part of it for me. So when I go out running, often I'll try on a bit of music on the watch. But some days I'll say leave that off and just see where your head goes. That's a bit meditative. Trying to get into swimming a bit and just listening to music. I would have probably to go back to the whole confident, happy-go-lucky, easy enough ride into the Dublin setup. When we had sports psychologists in and stuff, I was in one ear and out the other a lot, and I probably think I could have taken a lot more from that side of things out of my time in Dublin. But I suppose I've a couple of good friends who I can bounce things off as well. If I ever need to get stuff off my chest, I have a great relationship with my siblings who I can do similarly with if needs be. But getting out of the house, getting a bit of fresh air. Is really the key. And look, that's a bit of a trope or a bit of an easy answer when people talk about clearing the head, but it does work for me, simple as. That's what I'm kind of going after at the moment.
Fair play. One of my favourite moments, I've been in the green room under Crow Park, and got into the huddle 5 minutes before throw in, and we're getting into the zone, and you're the chain is linked together, and when we were told to look each other in the eye, and I scan around, and Jack or James McCarthy would cut you with his stare, and Clucko would nearly kill you, and I look around at Jack and just the smile, and made me laugh every time. Literally, I saw it 100 times. And how much of that was for you? And I know you talked about in the media in the parade you've done it, and you talked about it, but I know that in that circle it wasn't about public perception, it was about the group. How much was for you, for your own headspace, and how much it was for the group? Because I got such confidence and energy from it, and I spoke to you loads of times about it and how much I loved it, and I'm sure loads of people did. But talk to me a little bit about the psychology behind that.
Yeah, well, so I think it just, there was one of those, everyone huddled up, and last few messages, and here we go, out again. You can kind of hear the crowd rumbling, and yeah, we're going. And I think it was just said, now look around, look at everybody. And I did, and I just kind of naturally was like, Beck, you know, sometimes you kind of get imposter syndrome up at some of those training sessions or at those meetings where you're like, I'm beside Keane, Clucko, Philly Mack, Berna, and I was looking around and I just started smiling. And then after that game, someone came up to me and told me I looked like an absolute lunatic and that it was very off-putting for them. And then it kind of became a bit of a thing that we joked about. And I definitely did it consciously afterwards. But I do think that standing under Croker, bouts run out in front of whatever 1,000 people, like you're not hands around, like you're grabbing each other and in tight, and you're looking at some of the best people to play the game and some of your best friends, and like, geez, if you can't smile then, why can you? Anyway, it looks a bit, the problem is that this is after a warm up where you're pumping sweat, and yeah, it's a creepy look. It's not a look.
Yeah, that was my line, is that you're creeping me out here, Jack, but I love it. Like, don't ever stop. Like, so that brings me to this trigger, this fantasy conversation. So I'm mad about high performance, and during my period in 2019, obviously trying to make myself relevant, trying to add value to the team. Obviously wasn't playing as much, but was trying to help around the dressing room as much as I could. And I remember during the year, I just asked a few players, yourself, Con, a few of the lads, what your triggers were. And you gave me an answer, and I wrote it down phonetically in my book, and I'm going to try it. It was Doviante se tuve Sagan. Am I right? Try it there.
Well, this is the thing about fantasy, Bruno. You could be right. Who knows? The person, the author who wrote that is long dead, unfortunately. So I would go with Doviante se tuve Sagan.
So the story behind it is, you tell me that and everyone's like, what the hell is that? I wrote down phonetically on my phone, and I remember before the Thursday or Friday before the first drawn game in Croker, I went up to you and I showed you, I went into my notes on my phone and I showed it to you, and you just start spilling laughing. And you actually changed it, you spelt it right for me, and you said, and we talked about the story, about what it means. Can you just give us a bit of insight about why it's a trigger and what it means?
Well, I suppose I had a couple of things. We used to get notebooks, as you know, to kind of jot down notes on opposition or what have you. And I always used to scribble Doviante se tuve Sagan at the front, and I think Never Let the Pressure Overpower the Fun from What's Not Ready by Codeline, which not a song I particularly love, but I would listen to it on the way into all our matches just because of that line. But Doviante se tuve Sagan means it's time to toss the dice, and it's from a series of fantasy books called The Wheel of Time, which I started reading when I was about 10. And yeah, I do really like fantasy books, to the point that I'd have read those countless times. Like, the characters in them feel like friends nearly, some of them not so friendly, but it's it was a bit of a different slant on things. And then whenever Jim asked me what my trigger was, I said something completely different. I just gave word and was like, yeah, that's
me. You didn't want to get into it, did you?
I'm part of the group, yeah, get me involved.
I'm normal. I'm not into fantasy books. You actually got a tattoo of it. So when I asked, could I bring it up? He said, well, I've tattooed it on my leg. So I'm literally pot committed at this stage. So is that true?
Yeah, I haven't scribbled around my ankle, yeah.
Fair play. And I think that just shows, I suppose, that's why I love your character. I love your honesty. And as I said, we had to chat about comfortable in your skin. And maybe that was the insight that as a kid, not having a TV, that you were able to get away. And for me, is that the kind of getting away from your head, getting into this world? I was lucky enough to write a book over the last number of months and go on a journey of remembering things. And if you don't mind me saying, I think you have aspirations. Would you have aspirations to get into writing in this fantasy space? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely something I'd like to do, something I've very tentatively started working on. I don't think I have an autobiography in me, but I'd like to have it as a string to my bow that I've written a book. So the nice thing about fantasy is that you make the rules. It's whatever you want it to be. No one can tell you what works, what doesn't work. It's kind of a nice way for me to stay in touch with a couple of my friends from, say, school, or one guy who I worked with a while ago, who I probably otherwise would have drifted away from. But we're all fans of similar stuff, so we can, you know, kind of every now and then bounce things off each other. And it gives me an excuse to read all the books I read when I was a kid again as research, or whatever you want to call it. It's, this isn't going to be today or tomorrow, but I'd like to be able to say I gave it a good go at some point.
Fair play. I remember texting you a couple of weeks ago. I was watching Lord of the Rings, which I love. It's a commercial fantasy, I know, a franchise. And I texted you and said, is this too commercial for you now? Like, do you have to be like this world that is like books that have dust on them in the library and stuff like that? But you continue to say absolutely not, and give me, I think, Raven Deep, or you give me the word of where it is, was been attacked by the orcs, and you continued to give me quote after quote, and I was like, okay, Jack, I get the message. You know this. You know Lord of the Rings off by heart. It's fair enough.
Classics are classics for a reason. There's no snobbishness in fantasy world.
Can you give me 2 minutes of a visualization of what your world would look like? And I'm just trying to think about what can you not go there yet? From a, as you say, the rules, there's no rules. Is this, give me a time it's set in. Is it a different world? Give me a 2 minute visualization, because I'm interested. Or can you? Is there a patent on that? Do you have to wait until you read the book?
I'll have to be sparse on details, but the thing about it is, I'm sorry, I might have misspoken there if I said there aren't rules, because that really annoys me in fantasy books, where you set up very concrete rules for whatever world you're going to operate in. And then some people are like, you know, if there are dragons here, we can make whatever happen. And you're like, no, that's not really how it works. You still have kind of a baseline here. So what do you need to do? You need to kind of come up with a world, visualize it, map kind of a bit of a society. You need to come up with some characters. And then I suppose one of the really important things is a magic system, if you're going to have one. So that's what I'd be like. If you can kind of make any of those angles particularly unique or interesting, or a slightly different slant on what's been done before, then you've got something that's yours and you can run with it. So I'm looking at the magic system side of things. This is like, I need to really stress how in its infancy this is.
Well, once you start talking about it and you say it, you have to make it happen. You know, like what is said becomes reality. So the more you talk about it, the more you'll motivate yourself to do it. That's my philosophy. I want to talk a little bit about the Dubs again, but before I do, I just want to talk briefly about the front line and what I believe has given you massive purpose over the last year, and your whole life, and since you've been involved in it. Your work, as you said, you're coming off a 15-hour shift. I think you've done close to 14 shifts in a row or something like that. And I know you move some of them for exams, but like the effort and work and passion you're putting into it. You talk about passion of your job. Talk to me a little bit about that and how COVID has, what you've seen over the last 9 months.
I do love the job I'm doing at the moment, I'm very lucky, and given what's going on all around the place, very lucky to have a job and to be working in a field that is relatively immune to losses because of the pandemic. But from a COVID point of view, I actually don't have much of a perspective to give on it, because working in paediatrics then in Kilkenny, when it all hit, we came quite quiet, really. A lot of the, you know, schools were closed, parents were at home with their kids, were managing things a lot more than they probably would have been able to otherwise. We probably saw a lot fewer patients coming in. Now, those who came in were often quite sick, but, you know, not above and beyond what we'd normally expect to see. And then since coming back up to Dublin, I've been in Holles Street, which is a maternity hospital here. And COVID it makes things slower sometimes, and it complicates one or two things. But by and large, we're very busy in the way that they're always normally busy in there. Like, the babies are arriving, people are coming in, you know, they're pretty much going to just do their own thing. In like chatting to some of my colleagues, one of my housemates works in adult medicine, like it's been a funny one. Like, there's been this like low level anxiety nearly for, I remember watching videos and then chatting to Nick Fitz when all this was kind of kicking off. I was watching videos on how to manage intubated patients on a corridor. Like, we just didn't know what was going to happen. And even though I've never been like reassigned to an adult service or moved around. There's just been a constant low level something uneasy going on. So that's been a bit tough to manage. And then there's the feeling of, well, what am I doing? Like, am I helping out really? And, you know, I haven't in particular, but I'm doing the job I would have been doing anyway and enjoying that. But I think it's been a, there's no way to think about it. It's been an incredibly strange year for everyone in Ireland, regardless of your profession. And everyone has different kind of stressors and anxieties to be dealing with. So I've been kind of living life relatively normally. Like being able to go into work and have that even as a social circle is a godsend. I think if I was working at home, I'd really struggle. So I've been quite lucky.
Yeah, and you're always going to answer that humbly. That's the character you are. And I'm sure I've actually got two messages from people praising you, helping the delivery of their baby. So you are very much on the front line and doing a service that is very important for our mothers and our new mothers out there. So I know you don't self praise. So but it's an amazing, and it's been tough. I know, I'm sure, but it is great to be that you're out there and you're getting after it. Before we finish up, I do want to ask you around the Dubs and obviously going forward into an All Ireland final. Has it been tough watching this year? What were the main motives for you pulling away this year? I know you're a man that has a lot of self-awareness and has great perspective on life, but what was your main motives?
I don't really know. I suppose, I think if Desi hadn't gotten involved, I probably would have stepped away earlier. Desi has been incredibly influenced on my football career from when I was 12. And once he took over the job, I was like, right, I can give him a year. I can give it a good go. And wouldn't it be cool to kind of finish what we started all that time ago? But something just wasn't right. And it probably wasn't right since halfway through the summer last year, when I just felt the fun had gone out of the whole thing, really. And I wasn't looking forward to going to training. Like, you know, I'd spoken in interviews before about the love I had for the group and stuff, and that was always true, but it just kind of suddenly wasn't really anymore, just because of changes in my life as opposed to anywhere else. And then I think what broke me was the drawn final. Like, you build up everything for this game, and it went quite well on a personal level, and obviously we didn't win, we didn't lose, thank God. But I remember shaking David Moran. I was walking off the pitch and I was walking over to the ref. I thought there was extra time, and David Moran just kind of stuck his hand out to shake my hand, and I was like, we don't have to do this again, do we?
I totally agree with you. Now, I was in the stands this time, but the energy it takes personally for an individual to get to hype up for that game and to give it everything, and then to think about, I have to go back into training, I have to go back work, all of the things I have to kick out 2 weeks is a really difficult to take, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, I had incredible colleagues in Temple Street who like really covered my backside on numerous occasions for me to get out to training and stuff. And then I was at a clinic on a Thursday afternoon that following week. And if I had just said to anyone, I've got training, there would have been no help. I was there more to learn really than anything at that point. This is a pretty specialized clinic and I was surplused to requirements. If I'd have said I've training now at 7, I would have been told off you go. But I just kept my mouth shut and I stayed there till 8 o'clock, I think, and I missed training. And I was like, I can't go there. I can't. I just turned up and told GM I got late at a clinic. And didn't train, and we rolled into the next week, and thankfully everything went well. But I was so drained by that, and then I never really got it back. And then when Desi got involved, I was down at Kilkenny, which was always going to be a little bit more challenging. But you know, I was training away, had a little GPS unit, you know, decent enough shape without being in the best shape of my life or anything. And I went up. We went up and played Tyrone. And I'd come off, I don't know if I'd been working the night, two nights before, three nights before, and I Arrived up and was like, right, grand. We stopped in a hotel in Cavan, I think, and I nearly fell asleep sitting on the floor listening to our kind of pre-match talk. I was like, I'm not doing anyone any favors here. I remember, I think Kev Mack kind of spotted me. I was like, are you all right? And then came on at half time, hurt my hammer, went off. I actually, sorry, just going on a bit of a tangent, but I was coming back down from that game. I hurt my hamstring, got on the bus, rang a friend in New York, booked a flight to New York the following day, left the country, decided to quit football and came. And I say, sorry, that's another thing I don't want to say I'm doing, because I don't really like this whole retired, probably because I'm a bit younger. I don't want to say I'm retiring. Gaelic football is a hobby and it's something I love, and no one will be happier than me if I woke up tomorrow and said, I've got a bit of a buzz on, I want to play for Dublin again. It's not there at the moment. That's not to say I won't be there again. I'm going to be playing on tariff till I'm about 47 years old.
You've no choice in that, Jack, unfortunately. You have to. Come here, and like, say, this year, to speak, and I haven't went close to the group because I'm conscious of doing book and of my own anxiety about telling stories, and obviously you'd understand about the group and that type of thing, but I can imagine what training is like for them. I did it, obviously, with club, you did it, and I did it, rolling up to a training session, no shower, no meal after, takeaway. I'd say the enjoyment for the players at the moment, every county, not just Dublin, is minimal, other than the love of getting out there playing a bit of football. But do you think that does that resonate with you? Are you happy that you don't have to do that and try and self-motivate when it's just so hard to motivate yourself for just serious training and just rolling in, rolling out? I think the fun of it is gone for a lot of people, I'd say.
From a selfish point of view, I'm happy not to be there. But like, in fairness to the lads and the hurlers, the ladies footballers, the service it's provided, just like that last minute goal by Cork, that was one of the most exciting things that's happened to me in the last 10 months. And then to see the hurlers putting on exhibitions, all that's gone. Like, it is, at the start of all this, I was like, well, they're not just packing the championship on, like, there's bigger things going on at the moment. But it's been an incredibly important thing for so many people. And I think that it's really quite selfless what a lot of inter-county players are doing around the country at the moment. Because I'd imagine a lot of them are feeling getting a little bit less out of it than they would otherwise. I've just been working. Like, I watched the full Westmeath game, and then I was on my way home to watch the Dublin Meath game, which I don't know, you've been around the last few years. I'm just terrified of Meath. Every year, I just think that they've a really good team coming, and they've a lot of baggage that they want to batter at Dublin with. But I was really nervous about that game, and I got chatting to a friend, and next thing it was kind of half time, and I just checked my phone, and there was like 20 points. Well, it was a one-sided affair, and I just didn't get to tune in. And I haven't really been watching it. Now, you have Cavan winning and Tip winning, and you get in and watch the Sunday game there, and that's all fantastic. But I've really been surprised myself at, like, I'm less into the inter-county GA now than I would have been before I started playing. You're a GA fan first and foremost, and I remember one of my first years in Dublin being told, and then one of the other players just kind of said, I don't think any of us should watch the other All-Ireland quarterfinals because we need to be focused on ourselves. And I was like, I'm going to watch them. They're probably going to be good games of football.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm rambling a lot today.
No, you're right. It's kind of, I'm the same. You're a little bit fatigued probably with it, and you're kind of, there's so much going on that it's, yeah, but I'm sure it has been for so many, the sport. You spoke about it emotionally after Crumlin Hospital last summer. I saw the clip again about how sport is so important to people. Do you still, with the perspective of COVID and the last few weeks, have you seen that energy from people? Do you still believe that sport is so important to society and to positive mental health and all of those things?
Definitely, yeah. Even more so a lot of the time. Like, I know, unfortunately, we can't have crowds at games and things like that, but just to have something to talk about that isn't lockdown this and lockdown that, and I suppose I am privileged enough to work with children now. At the moment, they're very young children who aren't watching any football matches. But when you're working with kids, the pure excitement and joy they get out of watching whatever sport it is they like to watch is fantastic. And I think it's great. It inspires kids and keeps them active, and so many health benefits. You heard some of the phenomenal stories. I don't know if you were involved, Bernard, but Alan, I know, was, and the kind of project that David Brady ran, where he was bringing people who were cocooning or who were isolating for various reasons, just to have a chat with them. And that, like, the impact that has on people is immeasurable. And I think, like, I've rarely been prouder of the GA than I was when all this kicked off, because as an organization, the clubs around the country just stepped up, whether it was a charitable fundraiser, looking after older members of the community, all that great. So it was really incredible to watch. And then as the inter-county thing kind of came back into motion and there were restrictions and there was a bit of a clash, the GA didn't cover themselves in glory in all aspects of things, but it really highlighted, and this year has really highlighted, what this organization we're part of is. And it's the magic of it. Like, if it was just the inter-county teams, like, the whole point is that every player out there is representing a parish, and every player out there is representing their family and their friends. And I see how excited people in Clontarf are to see me playing, and I can only imagine that that's the same for Kerry lads, for Monaghan lads, for everybody. So I think the GA really could be one of the winners of this pandemic when things settle down. If we are forced to take stock of a lot of things and keep that perspective, it'd be phenomenal.
Yeah. Even our good pal Kieran Kilkenny got himself and his mother out. In fairness, he did some great work on social media. Probably didn't see it, you weren't on it, but he kept a lot of kids entertained and motivated. In fairness to him,
I heard that back from so many people earlier on. Like, again, something. Well, I was going to say something small, but no, a big undertaking by Kieran, and the impact it had on, like, I think you're talking hundreds of thousands of people. Like, so that's the real positive side of social media and the things you
can hear. Does it annoy you, I know I've kept you probably longer than I should have, but does it annoy you hearing, and you're probably not seeing as much of it, but you're probably hearing murmurs of it as Dublin, please God, get over the line for six. There's a lot of this talk around money doping and this team. For me, it's tarnishing the efforts that these guys are doing week in, week out to be the best as they can be. Have you any thoughts on that? Have you heard that debate, or what's your views?
I don't think it's new. It's something I was asked about a lot when we were playing. I've always said that our biggest advantage is that we all live in Dublin. And for me, going to Dublin training was a 20-minute cycle or a 15-minute drive from Clontarf. Now, that said, there's some lads coming from Dalkey where they're coming across town and rush out, but like, we, if we're going to be honest about it, like, we're not leaving work on Friday to drive to Donegal or to Kerry. And that kind of thing is an incredible commitment. I think that's a far bigger advantage than the financial side of things. I do think that there was a perceived threat to GA in Dublin for a while, that numbers would fall. In places like where I grew up in Clontarf, where traditionally you would have had rugby, you know, sailing, cricket, all these would have been bigger than Gaelic football. One of my friends from Monaghan slags me, I mentioned the competition with the local tennis club in an interview once, and he lost. I think that they were absolutely right to pump whatever money they pumped into Dublin to keep this, like, the setup in clubs around Dublin is incredible at the moment. And seeing hundreds upon hundreds of kids out training every Saturday, Sunday is fantastic. And that's what we should be looking for everywhere. So I think that needed to be done. I don't think, and you can correct me, I'm not sure when all this happened, but I don't think my age would have particularly benefited from it. I could be wrong, but I think it kind of came after I would have been grown up. And when most of this team who's achieved what it's achieved had grown up and developed into the players they were. And I think that there seems to be, from whispers I'm hearing, that there's real problems with a lot of clubs then in various kind of rural areas where there's emigration and there are clubs looking at folding. It's difficult to get numbers in. So I think the GA will have to just turn their focus there and make sure that that side of things doesn't fall. But, you know, sometimes you see people going on as if there's someone sitting in a room thinking, I'm going to win 10 All-Irelands for Dublin by throwing, like, we're all part of this organization that we're hopefully are trying to do what's best for it. I don't see kind of conspiracy theories. I don't jump at shadows. I think everyone's trying their best, and that the kind of landscape of GA now is a lot different to what it was when all that funding was allocated to Dublin. So I'd have no issue with it being taken away. I'd love to see it stay there because I think there's definitely scope for more growth. And I really do think that the barometer we should use is participation and club level stuff, as opposed to just looking at that 0.5% of, you know, the inter-county team is benefiting. You know, okay, it's bound to happen, but you've got to look at the bigger picture a bit.
Big time, 100%. Before I let you go, last question, I promise. When you look back at all you've achieved, what is a special moment? What is your most special moment around the Dublin setup? And it may not be on the pitch, but when you look back and makes you smile, what is that moment?
Yes, that's
tough. Or one of those moments.
One of the moments that you just look back on and smile. Oh, I'll wait till we're offline and tell you a few. I just find, like, the day after winning an All-Ireland is the Monday or the Tuesday where we tend to gather as a group, away from all the fans and everyone who's been celebrating around Dublin. And I went on one just beautiful, beautiful rollover session with Keenan Sullivan one Tuesday, and we wandered around Dublin and then met up with other lads in dribs and drabs. And it's just, every now and then we'll send each other a little photo from that day. That'd be one of them. Jeez, I should pick something on the pitch, shouldn't I, as opposed to just...
I don't want something from the pitch. I think that's perfect. I remember that day. You were in great form. You were in fantastic form. Jack, I know you have been up for probably 2 days straight now, so thanks a million for your time. I really appreciate it. I always enjoy our chats, and we will catch up for a drink before Christmas or around Christmas, please God. For any publishers listening, the next JK Rowling is here, the next $1 billion fantasy series, so check him out. But and thank you for your efforts on the front line. I know your people around you never say it, but it is very much appreciated by everyone. And thanks a million for your time, and look forward to seeing you soon. Thanks a million.
Awesome. I'll catch you soon.
Thank you very much for tuning in to episode 4 of the Bernard Brogan podcast. I hope you enjoyed that chat with Jack. I thoroughly did. Brought to you by Super Value, proud sponsors of the 2020 All-Ireland Football Championship. Ty Kennelly, Tommy Bowe and Shane Lowry were my first three guests. Please subscribe to OTB GAA to check them out as well.
This conversation was brought to you by Super Value, proud sponsors of the GAA All-Ireland Football Championship for over 11 years.